This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
Yeah. My man, George Verge, I believe we've met like once or twice. Last time we were together was the Blue Otter Golf Tournament.
That's right.
And how'd you hit him that day?
I hit him pretty good, man. Golf used to be like my addiction. I was out every day I could be. As music has taken off a little bit more, I don't get to play as much as I'd like to anymore, but that one's always a blast just because all your buddies are in town. Yeah. Everybody's getting rowdy. You guys had cigars waiting for us, which was great.
Yeah, they were like,
it was a good day.
They were like, we want you boys to be involved somehow. And I'm like, I golf, but I'm not. I'd rather just be like hanging out. And they're like, how about you guys hand out Miller Lite, you hand out cigars, and you give out hats. We're like, perfect.
Everybody's favorite person on the golf course.
And this year, I did better. Last year, I smoked 5 cigars that day because I don't drink. So I'm like, I can't partake in the beer stuff. So I'm just sitting there chiefing the Crown Head cigars. This year, I kept it to like 2. I think I had 3. I had one at the end with Bradley. But I'm like, 3 was a little bit better. But 5, I was like trying to talk at the end. I was like,
5 is strong.
5 is heavy.
That's 5 is really strong.
A lot of freaking cigars, dude. But yeah, how's life been going, man?
Best ever, man. It's been crazy. This has been the wildest year of our life. Just having music take off, having the touring thing take off, families growing and strong. And it's the first time I feel like I know who I am in this town, and that's a very gratifying feeling.
Bro, yeah, some guys, and you've been in town for a while, man. So yeah. When did you first get here? Because I know you obviously Waterloo back in the day in 2013. Did you move to town right when that was starting, or were you doing that kind of out of
Texas? So I moved basically at the beginning of 2015, October 2014. And I was lucky, you know, I had kind of bumped my head with Waterloo Revival. I'd played in bands in Austin my whole life, played on 6th Street since I was 14 years old.
What a wild place X's that is, by hands. The way. I love 6th Street.
It's a cool spot, and it's like I kind of took for granted like that being my hometown because I was like, well, every town's like this. You start playing 6th Street at 14 years old with X's on your hands, right? Like, that's what everybody does. Yeah. But I didn't realize how special that was. And then, you know, kind of grew up and I had bands in college. And but I had never toured. We would just play like weekends in one bar called the Rattle Inn. And we had kind of started drawing bigger and bigger crowds. And all of a sudden it wasn't a huge room, but we'd sell it out every night. 300 or 400 people be sold out every night we played it. And that buzz kind of got to Nashville. And so, I had a record label fly down. We signed a record deal. We moved to Nashville. And so I moved to town with a record deal, having never toured or done anything before. And I got here and I was like, oh shit, I have no idea what I'm doing, right? I don't know what a publishing deal is. I don't know what a management deal is. I don't know anything.
But you know how to play a show.
Yeah.
And in today's day and age, there's a lot of kids moving to town and getting deals with social pop that haven't played a show before. Having all those reps under your belt, dude, that gives you a big
leg up. It was definitely a blessing in disguise because, you know, I did know how to play a live show. And I knew I had written all my songs by myself before I got here. So it's like I knew how to write a song. I knew how to tell a story, which served me super well. But I did have to like fall on my ass a little bit when I got here. It was when I got the record deal, I was like, oh shit, I've made it. Like everything's going to be great. And then you realize like that's step 1 of 100, right? And so, you know, we go out and we're playing shows and everybody's got an opinion of who you should be once they've got money invested in you, right? And so like you get to town and this big shiny place wants to invest $1 million, get your song on the radio, but they also want you to like, you know, cut your hair shorter and maybe like wear a leather jacket and maybe wear some skinnier jeans and maybe that they want you to wear this jewelry that they've got. And all of a sudden it's like, well, if this person is investing this money in it, how do I say no to them? And I mean, it was before I could blink, I was somebody that I didn't recognize. I was making music that I wasn't passionate about. I was playing shows that I wasn't as into. I mean, we were playing awesome. We had a fiddle and a steel in the band. We were playing guitar solos with, you know, a long neck beer as a slide on the guitar. It was rowdy. Yeah. It was authentic and it was real. And it, I got away from that very quickly and polished things up really quickly. And all of a sudden I felt like I had kind of lost the heart of my music. And within a year I had lost my record deal. And so it was like a flash, right? You have instant success and then instantly fall on your face. And I'll never forget, when I first got to town, I was opening for Eli Young Band, who at the time was like my idol. They were the only people I'd seen it make it on a national scale out of Texas. They had, you know, Even If It Breaks Your Heart, Got a Little Drunk Last Night, Crazy Girl, like smash, smash, smash. Not to mention like, you know, the Jet Black and Jealous album and that stuff in the beginning that was like really raw and real. And so it's like I idolized those guys and they invited me out to go on tour with them. And I'm opening for them, and I feel like I've just, like, made it, right? And so Mike Eli, the lead singer, invites me up on the bus afterwards. And he was like, man, he's like, you're really good. He's like, you can sing. You got a great live show. You look good. You sing good. But he's like, you just need to get the shit beat out of you. He's like, you need to fall on your face a couple times. You need to live a little bit.
What great advice, especially coming from one of your idols.
I hated him for it, man. I hated him for it. And I was like, man, this has ruined Eli Young Band for me. Like, I can't believe he would say that to me. And then come to find out, he was exactly right. Like, I had to go live. Like, I had to go fall on my face. I had to go mess up. And, you know, that 4 years between when I lost that deal and when I was figuring everything out, was when I learned how to like write songs with heart, you know, figure out who I am, figure out how to say no regardless of what the consequence is if I don't believe in it. And that is what got me to who I am today, having success, making music that I'm proud of. And it's funny, like the country listener, they can sniff bullshit so fast, man.
Dude.
If you're chasing or if you're not authentic or like you're making music you don't believe in, their bullshit detector is instant, right?
More than anyone.
So if you
honestly
don't believe it, man, you're going off a cliff in a hurry. And it was like, I had to have the confidence in myself to say, I'm going to make music that I believe in and that I'm proud of. And if you like it, great. And if not, I don't care. That's when it worked. And so I had to learn some tough life lessons along the way, for sure.
Yeah, dude. And what? So how old were you when you moved out here?
Gosh, I was 22.
Yeah. What an age. And that's an age that everybody's kind of finding themselves, you know? So what a time to be here and to go from Sixth Street to Broadway. And that at that point it was like Nashville was just kind of like starting to blow up.
Yeah, it was starting to be the place, and it reminded me of the Austin that I grew up in, which was a little more dive bar, a little more, you know, dusty, a little more heart. And I loved it because it wasn't as polished, but it was like the Austin that I grew up in, where it was like, you know, collaboration everywhere and music everywhere and everybody's friends and knows each other. And so I loved this town. And I will say, like, getting to get here and write with the biggest, baddest writers that have written every song that you've ever heard, and kind of learn how to get better, that was a crash course of songwriting and artistry for me. Like, I never forget the first time I wrote with Ashley Gourley, and he put a post on a song, which is like, you know, you finish the chorus and then there's a little tag that also writes to the chorus at the end. And I was like, what the fuck was that? I was like, that just like made the chorus, put it on steroids.
Yeah.
It was called a post. And he was like, you're paying off the hook in front of it and behind it. Right. And I was like, that was the coolest thing I've ever heard. And it was like, you go to college of like how to write songs out here, writing with those guys and figuring out, you know, how to do that stuff.
You do, dude. And you get to meet so many people. I know somebody in the early days, and I'm sure you still have a good relationship with him, Colt Ford.
Yeah, one of my best friends in the world, man.
Which, again, a guy who's kind of been through it all and was doing it in the Southeast. And it's like, you get to bring your Texas thing and your experience in Austin, and you get to collaborate with folks that were doing similar kind of things in a different market. In the Southeast and Texas, not that different.
No, there's a lot of overlap there, and there's a lot of people that's the first place that they can go tour after they tour Texas, and Southeast has now become our strongest market, which is awesome. So there's a lot of overlap and a lot of camaraderie between those two areas. And Colt was, man, he was the godfather, right? At the time that I moved to town, he had collaborations with everybody, right? Jason Aldean, Luke Bryan, Keith Urban, Jake Owen, everybody was doing songs with Colt Ford, and he had no business being kind to me or being cool to me. And he was the first person to be like, hey, man, you're good enough. Like, you need to be here, and you need to meet this person, and you need to meet this person. Yeah. And he's the reason that I know everybody in town. And, like, unless you have somebody vouch for you in this town, everybody's got their walls up, right?
Dude,
because 100%, somebody's asking for something
so
all
true.
The time. So unless
so
you have somebody walk you in the room, nobody's going to give you a chance. And Colt was that guy for me. And what was really special is he did all of that for me. And now that my career is starting to take off, I had him in the room to write with me, and we co-wrote my first number one together. So that is like pretty full circle moment that he's now cashing checks on songs that I'm putting out because he believed in me on the front end. So pretty special.
Yeah. Talk to me about Mind On You a little bit, dude. Did you have any idea like that it would be? And somebody, I was one that you wrote that was like getting pitched around that you're like, I got to put this song.
Yeah, man.
Right.
I mean, I was basically in throwing the towel mode. You know, I had been here probably 6 years at the time. Two record deals that didn't work. You know, we had chased it. We had gotten close. Everybody in town sort of knew me, but also nobody knew who I was. And it was this weird limbo where I was like, I've given this everything I can, and it's just not happening. And so I wrote this song with Colt and Jaron Boyer and Michael Tyler, who are two of my best friends. I didn't have a publishing deal. I didn't have a record deal. I had nothing going on. I was just in this in-between phase and trying to figure out, like, maybe I'll make it as a songwriter if I can't make it as an artist. And we wrote this song, and I knew it was special. And they kind of did, too. And I was only one in the room that hadn't written a number one yet. So all these guys, like, know, you know. And they were like, well, let's send it to Jason Aldean. And so that night they sent it to Jason Aldean's producer, Michael Knox, who does a lot of the A&R for Jason's records, picking songs. And we get an email back with half a Broken Bow on it the next day, just being like, don't play this song for anybody else. Like, Jason wants it on his new record. And like, pretty matter of fact for those guys, but for me, I'm like, let's go. Yeah. Like, this is the break I needed. Like, this is God telling me, like, this is my direction. I'm going to be a songwriter. Like, this is it. And Jason's fresh off of Entertainer of the Year. I've idolized him in the music that he's made. I think this is like my path. Well, fast forward 6 months, I'm like starting to tease a little bit of my own music on social media, and I have some stuff blow up, and I had kind of teased my version of this song, and it goes crazy, right? And all of a sudden, I'm getting calls from every record label, like, let's go to lunch. Like, what are you doing? Like, are you interested in doing an artist thing?
Yeah.
And I end up signing with Records Nashville, which is where I'm at today and have had my success with. And I'm on the phone with Barry Weiss, who's an industry legend and the head of this label.
Oh, gee, dude.
Yeah. I mean, broken every artist you can imagine. And Barry's basically like, hey, man, we can't wait to work with you. And he's a New York guy, so he's talking fast. And
hell straight to the point, speaking right? my language, yeah, baby. Exactly. Let's go.
So he's like, we can't wait to work with you. You know, I've listened to all the music. It's going to be great. But you need to call Jason Aldean and ask for that song back because it's going to change your life and it's going to be your first single. And I'm like, what? You know, like, I was thinking I need this song just to pay my bills and keep the lights on, right? Like, I haven't had any success at this point. And so I prayed on it. I talked to my wife about it, you know, and I ended up betting on myself because I was like, you know, the stars have aligned this far. Like, what's one more roll of the dice? And so I called Michael Knox, asked for the song back, and he called Jason, and both of those guys were just so cool to me. They could have easily, and this story has gone the opposite way a lot of times in this town, they could easily have told me to screw off and, like, you can't have the song back. But they knew the opportunity that I had, they knew what it meant to me, and they gave me the song back and wished me luck, which was so cool of those guys, man. Yeah. There's a million stories of that going the opposite way at this town. And so in the world's dumbest move, I took a song away from Jason Aldean and put it out as my first single on a startup record label.
And it worked.
It worked. It worked. I bet on myself. I got to go play it on some morning radio shows, and it started catching, you know, it was the song that I thought it was, which is such a gratifying feeling as an artist because you have instincts, right? Of like, you believe in a song or you feel like it's something, but you never know until you put it out in the wild. And when you put it out in the wild and it is what you think it is, that is the most empowering feeling in the world. And so it just started catching like wildfire. And we put it out as a single. It was the most added song in America at country radio.
It's a big deal.
Brand new artist, startup record label. We have a 2-person team at the time. We're all kind of looking at each other like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
We got to hire more people. Like, we got to go. And it took us 13 months, a year and a month from when we went to radio to when it went number one. But by God, like, we did it. And it was a complete life changer for me. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got a number one on your wall and people are wanting to bring you out on tour and people are giving you the benefit of the doubt where you wouldn't have. And your reach is bigger, right? So you have people that know your music now. So when you put out more music, you have more people listening to it off the get. And it's opened every door I could have asked for. And fingers crossed, we're just top 10 with Cowboy Songs now. So about to have our second one and it's been rolling, man. Yeah.
What is the grind of radio tour like? Cause now you did a 13 month or where it took to get to the top of Mind on You, Cowboy Songs in the top 10, which congrats on that. That's big to have a second one, like have the momentum really
feels
going.
Good to not be a one hit wonder. Yeah, man.
No,
for sure.
Dude, no, and absolutely, man. And you've been doing this music thing for a while. So I think one hit wonder is the furthest thing from the narrative, even if Cowboy Songs wasn't doing what it's doing. But the grind of radio tour for guys and girls watching this that don't know.
Yeah.
What is that like? Because you have to be hitting the pavement, bro, with having that success. And like, I know that takes a lot.
I call it the best time you never want to have again. It's you go visit every city in America in the course of like four months. And you're playing conference rooms and cafeterias and big corporate radio buildings for decision makers. Right. And these are guys that hear songs every day and they're pitch songs every day. So they are not enchanted with like the magic of music. Like you have to knock them on their ass because everything like the first answer is going to be no. Just know that when you're walking in the building, like they are programmed to not like it because they have 18 spots for currents on the radio station. Right. Yeah. Because you think about it, if you're in the car listening to the radio, right, you're going to get 15 minutes on the drive home, 15 minutes on the drive in the morning, and that's all you're listening. And that's why stuff gets played so consistently on the radio is because it's just the windows that people are listening.
Yeah.
And so they've got 18 spots for songs, and that's including the biggest superstars in the genre, right? Luke Combs, Morgan Wallen, Chris Stapleton, Luke Bryan, like all those guys are taking spots, right? So they don't have a spot for you unless you kick the damn door down. And so you're going in there and you're introducing yourself like 9 million artists have before, and you have to tell them a story and play them a song that makes them think that you're different enough to merit one of those 18 spots. And I'll be honest with you, like when I went in with Mind on You initially, they were glad to meet me and it was cool, but it wasn't like they were in a rush to like go play it, right? And so you have to build your story, you have to build your audience, you have to become more undeniable. And then the few radio stations that did start playing it and take a chance on it, their research they get back is crazy, and they're like, hey, there's something happening here. And then it kind of grows and becomes a bigger thing. But it is hard, man. And I equate it to a political campaign. You know, you're going to go out and you're going to show these people why you're worth investing in and why their audience needs to hear you versus the other 10,000 artists that are knocking on your door. And you can't blame them, right? Like they have a very consolidated playlist. They have to protect their listeners and make sure that they're bringing quality stuff to the table. It's pretty nerve-wracking when you walk in and you see a guy that could change your life sitting across the table like this.
Arms
right?
crossed, bro. Right? The suit look. Yeah.
There's no smile. There's nothing, right? And it's a bottle of water and a bar stool, and they're like, "Go ahead, you know, blow my mind." You're like, shit.
Yeah.
Play me some shit I've never heard before, right? That's exactly what it is. But
yeah,
you go in and you try to show them that you're a personable guy, right? Like that you're somebody that they would enjoy hanging out with, somebody that's worth investing in. And I've been very lucky to have country radio get behind me and be a part of my story. And it's helped my touring so much.
Dude, that's what I was going to say. It's crazy. It feeds the touring markets. It gets you in places like New York, like Chicago, like Vegas, random spots on the West Coast.
I couldn't sell tickets. Like I really couldn't beforehand. I mean, I had my pockets of fans or whatever, but we go places and we sell 100, 200 tickets. That was it, man. And now it's like, we can fill up 1,000-person rooms, and that's something that's pretty cool. And as we have our second one, those crowds are getting bigger, and now bigger artists want to take us out on tour. You know, we just got to go out with Sam Hunt and Luke Bryan and Parker McCollum.
How were those shows, dude? What's it like being out with those guys?
It was awesome. This was the best year of touring I've ever had. All three headliners we were out with were just like complete studs. You know, I think they're all unapologetically their own artists, right? Which is a really cool thing because, you know, Parker's got more of that Texas singer-songwriter flair. Sam Hunt completely changed his genre and pioneered his own lane with the more like R&B flavored country music. And then Luke Bryan is just live show pyro energy legend man. Yeah. He's backstage smoking cigars and you know, he's the coolest.
Yeah.
And so to get to like take a little bit from each of those guys and put it into my own show. I was that guy. I would stand side stage every night. And I mean, 15 shows in a row is a show I've seen 15 times in a row. I'm standing side stage again that night. Like, what is he doing to entertain the crowd? Like, how is he killing the downtime? Like, how is he keeping people engaged for an hour and a half, you know? And it's the best school you could go to. And I feel like our live show has benefited so much from getting to see those guys play.
Yeah. Did you know Parker back in Austin?
Because I know you guys
were kind of there around like a similar time.
Yeah.
He talks about Austin being a huge part of his story.
100%. I moved out of Austin about the time that Parker was taking off in Austin. And so I had never met him. I'd always had a huge respect for him. And as an artist and a person, the way he treats his crew, way he is as a man, and then the music he makes, like he checks all the boxes for me. And so I was very, very flattered when they reached out asking us to go out on tour, and it ended up kicking our year off in such a huge way. I was very, very thankful for that, and we become fast friends, man. He likes golf. He's just a good dude. So yeah.
That's awesome, man. And in a year where it's tough for guys to get shows right now, just the state of the world and like the economy, like it's an issue right now with people having a lot of trouble selling tickets, like talking about
there's
like,
only
what you
so
were
many
about.
Dollars to spend.
Bro, but like it's the fact that you've had the opportunities that you've had and to be out with folks and be building the fan bases to now where you can go back and play the clubs. Like I know you've got Joe's on Weed Street coming up.
Yeah.
Like you've got Dusty Armadillo, Ray's Rowdy Honey Hole for us in Rootstown, Ohio.
That one's going to be wild. We're getting close to selling that one out. One's going to be
like,
a blast.
Like you get, but you go into like the bigger rooms, like the arenas or the sheds with these guys. And then you get to come back and play the clubs and have it be your own headlining thing. Like, that's a big deal. It's kind of the way, that's the blueprint for how it's supposed to be.
Well, and there's something magic about it being your crowd, you know? Like, I got to do direct support a lot of the Luke Bryan tour. So a lot of times, by the time I'm going on stage, the whole crowd is there, which is 18 to 20,000 people, yeah. right? And there is no feeling like that, right? But 1/4 of that crowd knows who I am and knows my songs, and the rest I'm trying to win over, which is amazing because then I'm going to get them out to the next show, right? But when you show up to a club and it's slammed to the gills, 1,000 people, and everybody there is there because your name's on the bill as the headliner, and you get to play 90 minutes of not just your hits, but songs that you're working out, new material that you're working on, storytelling, stuff like that you've hidden on an album that maybe like means something to you and you can tell the story behind it. That is magic. And that reminds me of like being a kid with like, you know, all the energy and excitement in the world, 16 years old, going to play a show, you know, for 100 of my friends in Austin. Like, that's where you, like, go back to that magic and you feel like, this is why I do this. And don't get me wrong, I feel like the luckiest guy in the world getting to walk on stage at these amphitheater shows in front of these massive headliners. But to walk into a venue with your name on the bill and have, like, your people there that you're sharing, like, not only, like, stories with, but sharing your success with. Like, you're not on that stage unless those people are showing up. And, like, they have as much ownership and me being here as I do, and so like get to celebrate that with them. It's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah. Do you have some people that have been riding with you since the Waterloo days?
It's crazy. Stuck with you? It's crazy. I would say every night that I play a headlining show, there is somebody that's been on the ride with me for at least 10 years front row that I will recognize every night, no matter the city, no matter the coast.
Yeah.
That's freaking special, man. That's crazy.
A lot of people don't have that, dude. People like, because artists kind of go through like different chapters of like finding themselves, and people come and go and all that, but to have like your ride or dies that have been with you since like the old school, that I call it BC, like before COVID, you know, like I feel like a lot of folks had a lot of change, like had the time to look in the mirror and kind of really find themselves during 2020 and came out a little bit different on the other side.
Yeah.
But to have
myself included.
Yeah, dude, same, bro. Yeah. Same, very different place than where I was before COVID. But it's like to have that is freaking huge, to know the whole catalog like that.
I think a big part for me, like especially having to go like one at a time make fans early in my career, just because I never had that like wild spark moment, and I have since. I've had these viral moments that have like moved me in bigger chunks, right? But like I had to go like hand to hand make them one at a time, like on the front end of things, and I think it created a deeper relationship with the fans that started with me. I mean, really, until I even did it on the Parker tour, and I had to kind of stop halfway through because it got a little bit out of hand. But I would every night, when I finished my set, I would sign an autograph and take a picture with every single person that wanted it.
Wow.
No matter how big the crowd. And if I was there for 2 hours, if I was there for 3 hours, I wanted them to know that I was thankful that they were there. And that changed my relationship with fans, because then I got to start hearing stories about like, this is what this song meant to me. And this is like, this is how I interpreted it and put it into my own life, even though maybe the way I wrote that song was a different perspective for me. Like seeing people, how they digest music, what draws them to music, and what live music does to like heal people and help people get through stuff, like that created this bond with me and my fans that like I feel like is so, so strong now. And the reason that I have so many people that I can count on to like show up and help do this. And it's gotten a little bit hard. When we were playing the end of the Parker tour, it had gotten so big where I felt like I was being a distraction and I needed to stop doing that. But it was the best thing I ever did, was, you know, standing at that merch booth table or standing side stage and just signing autographs, taking pictures, and hearing stories.
Yeah, dude. It's, again, people resonate with the authenticity and getting to know you. And they're not just fans of your music, they're fans of you. And I feel like country artists or country fans become like that cult following. And you see it with guys that you've also gotten to go out with, like the Brantley Gilberts of the world, for example, the BG Nation, or like you were talking about, like Aldean, like Aldean's Army, like the fan bases. And you're building that right now, dude. You're right in the heart of building that.
That was the best advice that Brantley ever gave me. And I owe Brantley a lot. Like, he took me out on tour before I deserved it, when I had first signed my record deal and I hadn't had anything going on. He was a fan and a friend, and he took me out, direct support, two nights back to back, sold out at Red Rocks. So I got to play in front of 20,000 people back to back, direct support.
Bucket list.
Yeah, insane, man. Yeah. Insane. And and he's been a brother since then, and taken a lot of pride in seeing me succeed too. But some of the best advice I ever got was from Brantley, he just said it as plainly and as cool as he does, but he's like, hey man, it's bigger than music. And I didn't know how to process that at first, and then I realized, like, you're not just selling or putting out music, but like there's a lifestyle, there's a brand, there's a how you carry yourself, how you treat people, like how you are personifying the music.
Yeah.
It's bigger than just a song. And I think he's such a great example of that.
Oh, dude, 100%.
And, like, and I think that that's a big part of, like, people have to believe the music they're listening to, and they have to believe who it's coming from, and how did that person write this song, and how did they get to being a part of this song. And that had a huge influence on me when Brantley said that to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's a guy that's gone through the grind.
Yeah.
Like, people like coming up in the Georgia scene and just extending that circle. Him and Colt were doing that together.
Yeah.
down in Athens, Georgia, and just growing the circle. And he was back in like the MySpace days,
100%,
you know, like,
man,
whereas for us, it's,
you
like
dig
Facebook
it out the dirt. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. And it's grassroots until you got a team built and you got all that stuff invested in you, man. What's it been like having from where you were to where you're at now, to have a great team around you, from the management side to the booking side to a label that's pushing your shit?
It's just so wild to have champions. Like, I'm so used to doing everything myself. And I mean, even out on tour, right? Like, I've gotten to hire a crew now, and I've got more people, and I've got like a social media guy out full time and stuff. And it's like, I'll still catch myself like pulling t-shirts out of boxes, and you know, my tour manager, he'd be like, "Hey man, this is what you pay me for. Like, put it down."
Yeah,
right? Like,
dude.
I've been so hardwired from, you know, doing that. It's just so nice to be able to like focus exclusively on making music and being creative and like, and the bigger picture vision stuff, and have people being like champions for me, around me, and believing in it. And, you know, I took a bet. I signed with one of my best friends as my manager. It was a startup management company for him.
Rich Management,
Brandon Rich. But he is the hungriest, smartest guy that I've known.
He gets shit done.
Yeah. Because
again, we meet all different folks. That crew, you've got some freaking dogs going to bat
dog. We talk about it, man. It's like a lot of these heritage places or places that have been around forever, like, they're not going to starve if you don't make it. But somebody that is going to starve if you don't make it, how hard are they going to work?
Yeah.
Right? Like, somebody that is going to go hungry if it doesn't work,
yeah,
they're going to be making outbound phone calls, right? It's not just inbound phone calls. They're hustling. They're going to find it. They're turning over rocks. And, like, that is the mentality. Like, if you don't want to be better every day, like, if you're not running the tape back every night and saying, where could we improve this? Like, if you're not thinking about where are we going to be next year, in 5 years, in 10 years, like, we don't want it.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be fucking hungry, man.
Dude,
and that's,
yeah,
like, that's what our team is. Yeah.
Were you, did you play sports growing,
yeah,
up?
Because
you sound,
yeah,
like an athlete right now. You get me hyped up.
Yeah.
I'm ready to run out the tunnel and go hit somebody on, yeah, the football field right now, dude.
That's
so what,
it, man.
What'd you play growing up?
I played everything. I played football, basketball, baseball, and then I played golf in college at University of Texas. So,
okay, so,
yeah,
you're a horns guy.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
But I played I love sports, love music, I love the team, and that's it, man. It's like, we were talking about like digging it out of the dirt and being hungry and hustling. And that's, I think it's very easy to, especially once you've gotten a record deal and once you have a team around you, to like feel entitled, like this town owes you something, and this town doesn't owe you shit.
Nothing.
Yeah. And nobody does. Right. So like, if you don't want it worse than everybody else,
yeah,
you might as well not be here. And I've fallen on my face so many times, and I've had the door slammed on my face so many times, but I think that's the reason that 10 years later, like, I'm still standing, and I've come out and I've had some hits, and I haven't gotten to where I want to be yet, but I'm getting closer every day. And I think it's that mentality that is the reason that I'm not, you know, wearing khakis and a collar shirt.
Right? Dude, there's, yeah, so many other things that you could be doing. That's something Nikki, yeah, T and I talk about, even like with Raised Rowdy. It's like, I get texts from my boys back in New York that are like, have these great, like, financial district,
yeah,
like stock market jobs. And they're like, bro, we'd be paying to do what you and your buddy are doing. Like, you're getting to do this music stuff, and it's fun, and it's a grind. But like, yeah, also I gotta ask you, how good is Texas this year? Are you feeling like, do you follow Texas football?
I think that we have a national championship on the way, yeah, man. I think we are playing just next level football right now. And I think that Sark has built a culture down in Austin,
dude,
where they,
yeah,
expect to win.
Yeah.
And it's like, nobody believes it if you don't believe in yourself. And like, those boys believe it, right? And you can just feel that energy oozing around them. And I think it's so cool. You know, you've got the Ewers and Manning dynamic down there, and,
yeah,
I think it's so cool how they support each other, and the team has rallied around both of them, and it's Ewers' team, but they know that the dynasty is going to arch afterwards. And I think the way that has all kind of like built itself around, dude, every position we have just monsters, and,
yeah,
we've got a coach that believes it. So It's been Texas is due, man. Texas is due, and it's made it really exciting to watch football on the weekends these days.
It reminds me of the Vince Young to Colt McCoy.
Oh yeah,
it reminds me of that like around like that two decades ago, like that Rose Bowl era of like where it was passed from Vince down to Colt, and you had that, and for the first year in the SEC to be going as well as it is, and
it's
for
unreal
to be able
because
to,
everybody's like, welcome to the SEC, you're gonna get tore up, come get it.
Many freaking Georgia fans, bro, they drive you nuts,
and they're some of my best friends, but boy, do I love ragging on them, man. So that'll be a big game this weekend too. Yeah. Georgia Horns is going to be crazy this weekend. Yeah. But I mean, I was in high school the last time the Horns won a national championship with Vince Young. So it'd be cool. It'd be cool to pull something off this year. But we got a lot of games we got to get through first. But I feel like we're going to make a run at it.
You got to get through Vanderbilt, bro.
Who would have thought that Vanderbilt would be scary on
schedule? I went to their first game this year because I grew up a big big Virginia Tech fan. So I was like, cool, the Hokies are coming to town. And it was like an 80-20 split of like, which most Vanderbilt games are. I'm sure it's going to change now that they're having success. But it's usually mostly the visitor fans in there to like.
Coming in to see it. Yeah, it's like. Take a Nashville trip and
maroon and orange everywhere that first week. And then the game went to overtime and Vandy ended up winning. And I said to my buddy Ike, I'm like, what if they pull off some crazy stuff this year? Did I think they were going to beat Bama the way they did? No, but they're sitting 4-2, bro.
It's insane.
They're looking good.
It's insane. Yeah, so we're going to go see that game. I got two little boys, and this will be their first Longhorns game, so we're going to go see Vandy, Texas, here in Nashville, which would be awesome.
Yeah, how old are your little ones?
5 and 7, man. Yeah. Two little lefties. They come play golf with me. Hey. They barbecue with me. They go fishing with me. They're just my little clones, man. It's the best.
How cool is it to be having the year that you're having while also getting to be a dad and have a great wife to share it with, have little boys that get to watch daddy do his thing, you know?
It's the most gratifying part for me because they've been, you know, the boys are probably too young to understand like our leaner days, like when it was scary and when I probably should not have been playing music, when I should have been getting a job and my wife was betting on me and we were making ends meet the best we could. But my wife remembers. And so for her to get to share in that is just, I mean, I'll never forget our first night on the tour bus, you know, and like being like, she's in the back lounge with me and we're just like, is this real life? You know, I got a driver and we're on this $1 million tour bus and we're cruising down the road and we got people helping us out. We're like, we come a long way. And then the boys getting to come out and see the shows, you know, the Luke Bryan tour especially, he just made them feel so welcome. He got them riled up behind backstage before he went on. Like, it was really cool. And I was in the truck yesterday driving my son to school, and he's like, hey, Dad, he's like, I think my favorite tour was the Luke Bryan tour this year. He's like, his music's really good, but he was also just so funny and so nice. And, you know, to hear your little kids say that, you're like, man, that's the best. You know, that's the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because it's like if you were it's like to have that dynamic of getting to be a family man and getting to enjoy the success. It's like, again, that's the plan. It's everything works out for a reason, and it you might be handling the success differently if it happened when you were 22 when you
first moved
here.
I think about that a lot, actually. I think that God gives you success when you're ready to handle it, you know? And I think that 22-year-old me wasn't ready for it, you know, and I didn't know who I was and I didn't know what I want to say. And I mean, even if I would have had success then, I'd be to this day having success making music that I didn't believe in or wasn't proud of. And that would have been a curse in itself, you know? And so I fell on my face and I got, you know, roughed up a little bit, to help me turn into the artist that I needed to be and the person that I needed to be you know, knows what the other side is like and knows how grateful I should be to be in the seat that I'm in today.
Yeah, dude, because you have so many people that get that success early and they don't really quite know what to do with it, or they drink it away, or they smoke it, they party it away, or they get into shit, you know. But to be where you're at in your life and be a dad and understand and know how to handle it. And the way you treat your guys too, like, that's a big thing.
We've built a little band family on the road, man.
How long have you had your guys with you? Like, this iteration?
About 3 years. When I started my solo career, I hired some guys from scratch, and my band leader, who's my guitar player, who's been with me the longest, he actually helped me build that band. I took him to coffee. I was a couple weeks out from signing a record deal. I didn't have anything going on. I was like, hey, man, this is what I can pay you, which is a lot less than I'm paying him now. I was like, this is what I can pay you. These are the handful of, you know, acoustic opener dates that we have on the schedule. You know, there's not a lot I could show you, but these are the songs. This is how hard I'm going to work. And I was like, you don't have to give me an answer now, but like, sleep on it. And if you think this can be arenas in 3 years, I want you to say yes. And if you don't, I want you to say no. And he called me back the next day. He's like, I'm in. And so he's been with me from van and trailer to record deal to song on the chart to a number one, and now we're about to have our second number one, and he's taken a lot of pride in that too, like helping build the shows and helping, you know, go from a club show to an arena show to an amphitheater show. And so to have that band family and grow together and like have them want it as bad as I do, it's the best feeling, man.
Yeah, because that's something I got to do in a past life. I was out on the road as a tour manager.
Yeah.
I did that, and I was on the road as a merch seller, and that's kind of what I did before jumping in on this Raised Rowdy stuff with Nikki T. And there's something about having your guys, and I got to go from the doing the van in the trailer, mostly driving the van, tour manager. We did the bandwagon thing for a little bit. Which is
still living pretty high on a hog, man.
But
I
had never driven like CDL or anything, and I'm driving that thing to South Dakota, pulling the big trailer in the back. In the winter, bro, driving through like ice storms and shit. But then the moment you get, when you have the same guys that were in the trenches with you in the van and trailer or the SUV or whatever, and to have that same crew be on the bus, like you said, with the moment with your wife, like it's just such a great feeling to be like, wait, none of us have to drive.
That was we had been kind of like planning this night out when me and the guys were like, the first night on the bus, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna order pizza. We're gonna put on Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, watch the movie, and drink a cold beer, and that's what we did. The first night on the bus, we stayed up till like 4 o'clock in the morning watching movies, eating pizza, drinking beer, and it was like, this is our life now. Let's go.
We've made it to where we've been wanting to get to.
Meanwhile, it's like the shittiest bus. It was like that bus broke down the next week and the week after that. We're on a much nicer bus now, but it was a bus.
They break down, bro.
They do.
Do you remember where they broke down?
Oh gosh.
Were you at least near like something? Were you able
Kentucky,
to get to like a Loves?
We broke down in Death Valley outside of Las Vegas, which was 104 degree heat. That was brutal. But somehow we always made the show, man. And you learned a lot about yourself through that. Yeah. But we're on a nicer bus now, thank God. So
Who's your bus driver? Bus drivers are my favorite because they're characters.
Yeah, my bus driver is awesome. His name's Theron.
It's always a character, bro.
Man,
it's always a
dreads.
Character.
He's the best. He's a big gamer, but he says his passion is driving heavy equipment, he's the best dude. You don't feel a bump when Theron's driving. You sleep like a baby. Anytime we have sub drivers, you know, it's like,
you get the strips.
But Theron is smooth, man. He's the best, yeah. That's shout awesome. Out Theron.
Yeah, we
he's
had,
the best buddy.
Yeah, when I was out on the road, we had Daddy Dan, who was like a school bus driver linked up to like, so we were like, and he recently passed, unfortunately, but like the last chapter of his life was getting to go out on the road and like go from driving little kids to school to like driving us was just crazy. And then we had a guy named Bobby Lee who used to cover up when we'd go through like toll areas. He put a piece of paper over the tag. He was like, Bobby Lee don't pay no tolls. talking about himself in the third person. We had a guy named he was like a preacher. His name was Greg, and he was like very like it was a certain kind of way. He drove Trump's pastor Locke or whatever.
Oh yeah,
interesting guy. And then we had another guy named Cookie, and Cookie was freaking nuts.
Well, so, they're all personalities.
They're
man.
All. That's what I love though. They become part of the family.
But once you find a good one, you got to stick to them because there's crazy ones out there.
Yeah, and that's what
that's
who Daddy Dan was. And it sounds like Theon's that guy.
Yeah, he's that guy, man. He's that guy. So we're very thankful to have a good driver because we kissed a couple frogs on the way to getting a good one, man.
You do.
Yeah.
That's part of it, man. Yeah. That's part of it. You hit that rumble strip, you fall out of your bunk. Everybody's falling out of a bunk at least once.
I'll never forget my first bus experience was not my own bus. I was writing songs at the time. This is around the time that I wrote Mind on You. And Clay Walker, this is during COVID. Clay Walker hollers at me and he's like, hey man, I want you to come to Texas and help me write on this new record. And I'm very thankful. He singled two songs that I wrote for him. They're both top 40s country radio. Like pretty cool to have somebody believe in you. But Clay was like, hey, you know, COVID's going crazy right now. I don't really want you to fly and be around all that. He was like, I'm just going to send the bus to pick you up. And I'm like, oh, hell yeah, man. We come on Clay Walker's bus. It's going to be a $3 million bus. It's going to be, you know, marble and granite and everything. And he sent his, like, original band bus from 1990 to pick me up.
Oh, the stories that bus
could tell. You're talking, like,
tell.
Shag carpets, yes. A VCR, like, duct tape couch. And I'm like, oh, my God, right? And then the bus driver's like, yeah, I'm not actually a bus driver. My son is a bus driver, but, you know, I'm just filling in. And I'm like, man. Anyway, so, like, we get in the bus. And, like, the main rule for a bus driver, right, is, like, don't eat a big meal before you drive all night because you can fall asleep, right? And so that's, like, kind of their big payoff at the end. You drive 8 hours all night, and then you have a big meal, and you go to sleep. And
yeah.
And this guy, I mean, he's probably a little bit overweight. He's probably like late 70s, right? Ooh. And this is when the Popeye's spicy chicken sandwiches are all the rage, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he pulls into like a joint gas station. We're not on the road for 30 minutes, right? It's probably 12:30 at night. And he pulls into a joint gas station Popeye's. He gets two spicy chicken sandwiches and 2 5-hour energies and just drills all four of them, right? And I'm like, this guy's either going to have a heart attack or fall asleep at the wheel. Like, I don't know if the chicken sandwiches or the 10 hours of energy he just took.
What's going to win? Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, we get a couple hours down the road and it's just, bah, bah. And I'm like, man, I was like, I got to go up there, right? So it's probably 4 o'clock in the morning at this point. And I go sit shotgun, and I'm like, I'm just going to, like, try to keep this guy, like, between the lines. So I'm sitting shotgun, and he's driving. And so I start asking him questions to try to keep him awake or whatever. And then he starts answering the questions looking at me and not the road. He's like, did I tell you about the time I drove for Jefferson? And I was like, dude, I was like, if I'm going to die, at least it's going to be in my bunk. So I went back to my bunk, and I sat there just praying the rest of the night. He blew out the whole right side of tires about 2 hours later.
Oh, geez.
And we ended up getting him fixed. But I got there, and I was like, Clay, never again. I was like, I'm flying every other time we come down.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. So those, a good bus driver is a must.
Yeah, man. those jump seat conversations are great though.
I was like, I thought I was gonna do something going up there to keep him awake, and about 5 minutes into that conversation, I was like, I'm for sure dying if I go through the windshield. I'm making my bunk, I might make it.
I might have a shot. Yeah, I'm making it worse being up there. That's wild, dude. You have some big, so this year you've gotten to obviously go out, you've got the headlining stuff closing out the year. I saw a lot of radio shows, like the guitar pull things, which again are great. It's part of like the radio tour thing, but then getting into markets and then you'll go back and tour them and all that. Stagecoach next year, bro.
Yeah, man. Crazy. That's like the festival, right?
That's the Coachella of country music, dog.
It's crazy, crazy. So, we're going to get a really cool spot in there. We're headlining the Bud Light stage, which is like indoor air conditioning. It's slammed to the gills. That's going to be crazy.
Main stage is cool. Indoor air conditioned.
Headlining that stage. That's a good one. It's going to be crazy, man. So that'll be slammed to the gills. And I mean, just to get to do that. And I'm sponsored by Traeger. My Traeger guys are coming out there. They're going to have a rental house. We're going to have, you know, barbecue rolling out there. Bring a little Texas out to California.
Hell yeah.
It'll be crazy. Nelly's going to be out there. So I did a song with Nelly a couple years ago. We'll have to see what happens there. But, dude, it'll be really cool to just be, you know, have the whole fam out there and get that Stagecoach look.
Hell yeah. And then Dylan Scott next year too, right?
Dylan's become a fast friend, man. And I think he's just like, he's been a sleeper superstar. He's just had hit after hit after hit. And his socials have gone crazy. And he's got such a core following. He's done exactly what I'm trying to do, like build it from the ground and build something massive. And now he's just got this rabid fan base, and he's selling crazy tickets, and he's having success with everything he puts out. And so I was super honored for him to ask me to come out on tour for him. And then we're going to have Graham Barham open it up in front of us.
I love that kid, dude.
To have Graham and then us and then Dylan, I think it's going to be a stacked ticket. I think those rooms are going to be to the brim, and it'll be a great way to kick off the year.
Yeah, talking about like guys like Graham, now you've been in town for a while, like coming up on 10 years. What's it like now being like, they say it's like a 10-year town.
It is,
like you're being considered like a borderline like OG now. You've been here, you've had those moments. Now getting to be around like some of the younger cats that are coming up.
It's cool, man. It's especially with guys like that I like a lot. It's I've fallen in every bear trap you can possibly, from, you know, bad deals to bad decisions to bad music. Like, I've done everything wrong you can do and barely made it still standing on the other side. And so I try to help those guys out as much as I can. And you know, it's not from a preachy way or anything, but like, hey, this is what I wish I didn't do.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys are, you know, so much smarter and more polished than I was when I got to town, and I don't need any of my help, but I love to be a resource where I can. And I've had a lot of these guys call me and ask for advice. And more than anything, it's like being able to introduce these guys to people like songwriters that could change their lives.
Do what Colt Ford did for you.
Exactly, man. Colt did that for me. And I feel like it's important that I do that for the next generation. And so if I feel like there's a connection that I can make that can help them grow in their career, I'm obviously going to do my best to make that happen.
Yeah, dude. No, that to me is one of the best parts about this town and about this country music community, is a lot of it is bringing the next guy up, bringing the
100%.
Next girl up. So much of it is that.
100%. Because you don't make it without it, right? Unless somebody taps you on the shoulder and says you're good enough to be here, like, it doesn't happen. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. So what do you like doing when you're not doing the music thing? Yeah, you know, your dad, you said barbecue, Texas football.
That's it, man. Golf, football, barbecue. I like being on the lake. I just like being outside. I take my boys fishing a lot. We got a little creek behind the house. We'll throw our boots on and go wading in there, catch crawfish, you know, throw a lure, let the dogs run a little bit. I've always got something rolling on the smoker. So yeah,
what's like the go-to? If you were like competing in like a barbecue,
I'd put my brisket up against anybody.
Okay.
Yeah, being a Texas guy, man, and I've been cooking brisket since I was a kid. And so I put my brisket up against anybody for sure. It's hard to find the time to make it anymore. But that one's a lot of fun, especially on a game day. You know, have it rolling, get up early, stay up late. I got a little fire pit in the backyard. I love to have that thing going. And then golf is it, man. I love playing golf with my buddies. I mean, really, golf's an excuse to be outside for 5 hours drinking with your friends, right? And then you hit a couple balls in between. But yeah,
it's the best networking tool, dude. It's a lot of fun. Whether you're having, it's like fishing and golf, and I guess hunting too. Like a bad day doing that is better than a good day at work.
People always say that, and you get to be around people that you wouldn't otherwise get to be around for that long. You know, there's a lot of bigger industry guys, whether it's radio or record labels, that would never give somebody that's starting out in music 5 hours of their time. But if you get out on the golf course, like, you're going to be with them for 5 hours. And like, people don't realize the opportunity that is to like be in front of somebody that holds the keys to whatever you're trying to get into for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Like, that's it, man. You'd normally get a half an email back from them maybe, or from their assistant, right? Yeah. But to get out and get to do that, like, it's a pretty powerful thing.
What courses are you a big fan of out here?
I always say that my goal is to land at the Grove down just south of Franklin one of these days.
Ooh.
That's the spot. But it's gonna take a few more number ones for
that.
But
dude,
my dream is to get home from touring, pop in the golf cart, throw my kids in, and go play nine holes. You know, Sunday afternoon kind of thing, just right there. So that's the dream I have visualized. If there's a little fishing pond in the backyard and a pool too, that might be a little bonus.
Okay.
But we're going to keep working hard.
Do you get to play on the road a lot? Do you bring the clubs out?
I actually have a Traeger and golf clubs on the bus. So we're always rolling
that
smoke.
That is so on
we've
brand.
We've got lawn chairs.
Yeah.
We've got a tent. We made fast friends on the Sam Hunt tour. Everybody knew that as soon as I got off stage, I was going to have the smoker rolling. And every night, the after party was at our bus. We'd have the tent up and the Traeger rolling, and I'd have ribs and sausage. And like, all of a sudden, it was like Russell Dickerson and Sam Hunt's whole band and crew would come to, like, a bunch of hyenas after the show would come to our Traeger and just have it rolling, man. So it was a fun summer.
Again, you talk about like the community and the networking of golf. Barbecue's the same freaking way.
If you can't make this fun, man, what are you doing? Like, we're living such a charmed life, getting to play music for a living, getting to meet people for a living, getting to go to the coolest cities in the world for a living. So, like, make it fun, man. Like, you do have to sit on a tour bus for 10 hours at a time or whatever, but when you're there, it's like, why not, man? Have the smoker rolling, have a cooler out there, have music playing. We got a little gym that we set up outside of our trailer. It's like, you got to bring some semblance of home on the road. And if you make it fun, it's the coolest thing in the world.
It definitely is, dude. What's you talk about, like, things that you would that you're telling the younger guys? What's something that you would tell 2015 George Burge, fresh to town? Like, what's something you'd look back and tell yourself?
The biggest lesson that I learned was not being afraid to say no. I was terrified to say no to anybody in this town, because I, like anybody does, when you move here, you have that imposter syndrome. You're looking at everybody that looks secure in their own skin, and they look like they know what they're doing, and they look like they hold the keys to the dream that you want. And so, like, yes, sir. Like, you want me to do this? You want me to cut this song? You want me to be this artist that I don't think I am? Yes, sir, I'm going to do that. And that is not art, and that is not passion, and that fizzles out faster than anything. And if you don't believe in it, if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no, man. That's it.
Yeah. Dude, those are some great words right there, man. And hey, I appreciate the hell out of you coming on and doing this, dog.
Thanks for having me, man.
It was fun. And anything we can ever do at Raised Rowdy, bro.
You guys
like,
are great.
Let us know, please. And I know Brendan and like the team knows, like, we're in for whatever y'all need us to do. But seriously, like, congrats on all the success. Cowboy songs, bro, like, it's awesome to see that.
Thank you.
What are you, 2024, the year of George Burge, and it's like, coming off of that, what 2025 is going to be like, bro?
It's crazy. We've got some big duets cooking. I've been working on a bunch of new music. Cowboy songs, hopefully going to ring the bell and be number one here by the end of the year. And that's fun in itself, man. It's my favorite song I've ever written. I got pitched that song on a retreat with a couple of my buddies. The title, I got pitched a title, and I initially kind of was like, man, I don't get that. Like, she only dances to cowboy songs. What does that mean? And then, like, 10 seconds after I said that, just like a wave of vision hit me. Like, downtown Austin, like, chasing my wife at a bar, like, smoke, friends, music, and then, like, all the cowboy songs that I grew up in on you know, like, Straight Tequila Night, K-13 is her favorite song. She only dances a cowboy song. You know, like, there was that Kenny Chesney, El Cerrito Place, I've Been Looking For You, Baby, turned into, you know, I Don't Come Here Much, But She Loves This Place. Like, I'm trying to find her, right? Like, that's, so all of a sudden I had this, like, vision of what it is. And we sat down, and I mean, we stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning writing the song. We finished it. We're like, man, we did something. So to have that song take off like it has, it's the best feeling, man.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, hey, I'm excited to see how this year wraps up. What a year, dude. Hard work pays off. Good things happen to good people,
thank
man.
You, thank
you're,
you.
You're a great fucking dude. So great things are happening.
What
man.
A great hang.
I appreciate you, bro, so much. Y'all be sure to check out our boy, George Burge. Request cowboy songs. Let's get this thing to freaking number one.
Let's
before
go,
the
baby.
End of the year. We're in the top 10 right now. And is it georgeburge.com
yep.
website?
George Burge, anywhere you hang out or listen to music, you find
yeah.
me.
Yeah. And if you're in any of the spots, especially like Joe's on Weed Street, one of my favorite clubs in the
Chicago
country.
Chicago is going to be rowdy.
The
come
dusty
on.
The Armadillo, one of my absolute favorite spots, and a ton of tour dates. Get on the website and get your tickets now. Go see our boy, George Burge. Shout out to our friends from Surfside. We're going to send George home with a 4-pack of the iced tea.
I'm fired up
vodka.
About that.
Yeah, dude, you and your wife, you'll enjoy those, man.
I'm going to go drink that on the golf course today. My wife might not see them.
Yeah, well, that's just it, man. They're not carbonated, so I've been told that they sneak up on you.
Yeah.
You know, they're crushable.
It's my
that's
favorite
what Nikki
kind.
T likes to say. They're crushable. And shout out to our friends at Surfside. Y'all be sure to go surfing with us. And for more on us, visit RaisedRowdy.com. For my man George, I'm Matt Burrill. This has been Outside the Round.
I ain't never been the kind for staying one place for too long. I ain't never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks on my sleeve. They usually just make